Hello, my name is JD Boudreaux, and I'm your host for Well Within Reach, an MTS Therapy and Wellness podcast. MTS Therapy and Wellness is a locally owned company by a group of therapists with a home base in Lafayette, Louisiana since 1983. The company was started by physical therapists who had a desire to treat patients from a holistic perspective. The company is now led by a group of individuals who are bonded together by the same idea from 30 years ago, a desire to treat our clients and our team through mind, body, and spirit. Our tribe of professionals have come together to form a perfect storm of therapy know-how and personal growth cravings. Our goal is to help people on their journey toward their best self. The goal of this podcast is to share information that we find important and interesting as we navigate the world of therapy, business, and leadership. Your goals are well within reach. We're here to help. On today's episode, we'll be discussing a new wearable device in the medical field, Cypher Skin. I would like to welcome today's guest to our podcast, Chief Scientific Officer, Mr. James Heathers. Welcome.
How you doing? Well Within Reach Nation? Yeah, it's me, or what's left of me. Start off like we'll do that to you. How are you, JD?
Doing pretty good. I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule and the startup life to join us today. If you could start off, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Oh, right. Well, I am an Australian gentleman, if that wasn't wildly obvious from the accent. I came to America in the tail end of my PhD, which would have been 2014. Let's not cover all the degrees before that. That would be boring. My PhD is in biosignal methodology, essentially. So you attach something to someone, get a signal. What do you do with it? Well, you can't keep it in the fridge. It needs to be analyzed. How and why it's analyzed and what we can do with the information was the center of that PhD. It was very good fun. I went to work in Poland for a while doing some cardiovascular signal analysis, which was my first postdoc, which is a postdoctoral fellowship for people who are not familiar with academic jargon, of which there is a lot. My second postdoc was in Boston. I became a research scientist, and then science as a career is very hard, especially doing the same kind of thing over and over again. And then the opportunity arose to work for a startup, especially one that's doing remote healthcare monitoring during a pandemic. I mean, it felt like a good opportunity. So, I got American work rights like a perfectly legal and above board little boy, and now I'm here. I've known the people here for ages and ages, but it takes that kind of level of relationship sometimes to bring people out of the academic world. But now I'm the CSO of a startup. Who saw that coming? I'm still in many respects I'm still very much a scientist, so. You're allowed to ask science questions, and I will attempt to sound clever while I answer them. How about that?
Awesome. That sounds like a plan. Let's talk about a little bit about the Cypher team that y'all have put together. A little bit about some of the engineers and some of the owners that y'all have currently put together on y'all team.
Oh, sure. Well, this changes depending on who's contracted at any given point in time. So we have somewhere between 12 to 14 staff. So We're still a startup. We don't get to be an SME yet. We have an executive team of three, which is myself and Shaka, who is ops, and Phil, who is the CEO. We make a series of decisions, hopefully well, about how to deploy everyone else, which is two marketing people, five or six engineers, depending on how you count them, a business development gentleman. So it's structured as you might expect for a small organization. The company was started in the first instance because Phil, the CEO and founder, was tremendously beat up at some point in time when he was deployed in the military. And he started thinking about processes that needed to be employed to make him less busted. I mean, he was really broken. And through the application of particularly focused, what essentially amounted to PT, or the forward Baghdad military base version of it, returned from "I'm sorry, you'll never walk again" to fully functional human being. And I think that sets something off with him, because it's something that he talks about a lot. I mean, so the remoteness of the environment and the capacity to change that he had were things I think he wanted to instrument. Now, he'd been an engineer forever, and a lot of the design stuff that we have is led from that kind of direction, which is also probably why we don't have a CTO. Is because that's, I suppose, part of his hat. And what that means that we're working on is basically biomedical instrumentation wearables, which sounds incredibly fancy, but what it essentially amounts to is sleeve or base layer garments that do motion and biometric tracking. So, I mean, even that is not a particularly simple explanation, but you have an audience full of PTs, sir, so everyone will understand what that means. But just in case someone's walked into the room and said, "What is he talking about?" The answer is basically, at any point in time, any given series of your limbs are moving and can be tracked and saved. And we build very, very slimline garments that go under regular clothes that track movement and vital signs and progress through changing both of them.
And looking at some of the designs, I know we're familiar with the Cypher sleeve or the Bio sleeve, but you also have a few other products as well, Bio Legs and the Digital Mirror app. Talk a little bit about each one of those and kind of what separates each one of those products.
Sure. Okay. Well, you've definitely done your background, haven't you? Look at that. All right. So the Bio sleeve is the mature one. It's kind of the it's the queen of the development process here, very much so. So it is a sleeve like you would see. Remember when NBA players had to cover their tattoos because they were regarded as actually, I don't know how they were regarded. I don't know a great deal about basketball, but I mean, tattoos are very popular. But I think it was probably an advertiser thing, where they went, "Oh, I don't want to see sailor girls on your upper arms, sir. Cover that up." So they started wearing these sleeves, which is sort of a fashion item. It looks almost exactly the same as that. Some of them have straps, some of them are enclosed, but essentially it's an arm sleeve that covers about 8 to 10 inches above and below the elbow. That's the Bio sleeve. What does it measure? Heart rate, oxygen saturation, temperature, stretch across the upper arm, and of course, motion, which is the big one. Position of the arm in space and the movement of the joint. The digital mirror is not a separate product. It is the platform that allows you to use the Bio sleeve and all the other hardware. And it is the reflection in a avatar of what you're doing when you move in the Bio sleeve. So if you put them on and dab, the little blue man that is on the iPad is also dabbing. Apologies to anyone over the age of 40, because let me assure you, I only figured out what that was the other day. I thought people were trying to be street signs or something. It's not important. So the digital mirror, which is always DM around here, because everything has to be shortened in a startup, it's mandatory, is tracking that, as well as other metrics that we get that are the angle across different joints. So it's easy enough to do the elbow and the shoulder, obviously from an arm sleeve, and a statement of what the sort of biometric status is. All of that is recorded and saved, and all of the recorded and saved data is databased. So what it means is, if we have all that stuff together, even if it's just an arm, we have a reasonable capability for tracking, obviously, range of motion, which is obviously a big thing in any rehabilitative space, especially when you consider it in the most general possible sense. After an injury, especially elbow or shoulder surgery, after a stroke or another neurological event. Everyone who's listening to this is filling out that list in their own heads. But, yeah, I mean, it's a general use device, so, yes, everything. But as well as motion, that is confined just to how does the arm articulate, You can also get a reasonable metric from something like this of how fast are you walking? It was like how far is the actual sleeve physically traveling through space? What is your heart rate response to standing up out of a chair? You get some analog of ground reaction force and similar things, but we don't worry about that because we're also building a knee version, which I don't think has an official name, but it's still a bio sleeve. It just happens to be a sleeve that crosses the knee. It's exactly the same stuff as might be expected. It's just the lower body analog. So range of motion, various ambulatory parameters, and their ability to be sewn together with the biometric data. So if people who are listening to this are PTs and they're already thinking, okay, what about something like the 6-minute walk test? Yes. What about sit to stand test? Yes. All of these have measurable analogs if you have some piece of movement and some piece of physiology and you sew them together. If you can wear one of these chronically, you can do a lifelong series of 6-minute walk tests to find out how well you're doing over time if the battery can keep up. All of these things have extremely flat components. Nothing sticks out. It does have exactly the same exterior as the sleeve that the chaps in the NBA have. It looks very similar, but if you look inside, there is a layer of encased silicon, and all the hardware is in the layer of encased silicon, which is in the hope of making it washable, which, I mean, especially right now when you're worried about contamination, if you have to wash it between people who sweat in it or, God forbid, get SARS-CoV-2 into it, you can wash it with soap and water and make it go away. It's as cleanable as a hand. Or at least that's the idea. We're nearly there. That's almost done. And it's easy enough to do simply because everything is extremely small because modernity is fantastic and the whole thing is basically in a block of silicon and everything is connected by wires that are very well insulated. We have a few projects that are apart from that, but generally they're variations of those models. They're variations of, let's build something very low profile, capture joint information, capture biometric information, and then use it to make inferences. That's a very long explanation for which I apologize in retrospect.
I think that's some great information. And you mentioned a lot of metrics, and you talk about us being in the middle of the pandemic time.
Oh, yes.
Just interesting to see if y'all have, you know, definitely can see how it can benefit moving motion and looking at joint angles and different things like that. But various metrics that you mentioned, O2 saturation, temperature, a lot of those things are metrics that we're looking at in the medical field to track symptomatic people in with COVID-19 or maybe even other disease processes. Have y'all started any ideas of how that could work in that realm yet?
We've thought about it a great deal. It's one of those things where you say, this is a very ambitious idea and we have to fit it into the development cycles of a startup. To be able to do that accurately, I'm not convinced that the crossover between infection and symptomatology and the information that we might get would be a good target. I would love to be able to do that. If I had a big department full of people and we had a huge database that was better organized than the database we already have, that is absolutely something that I would like to attempt. But there is the other problem with that is that when those metrics start getting affected, if you're talking about someone has a respiratory illness and there's a relationship between infectivity and symptoms, the idea that someone would rely on it in order to be able to say what their status is getting us into a space which is getting out of kind of ambitious and a little bit more into irresponsible. We like the applications that it's for because they're not, I mean, it's something that hasn't been particularly well done elsewhere. And the idea that the metrics that we have work to do the job that we've set for them is not controversial. If I was still a scientist, I would love to run with everything you just said. But I'm not a scientist anymore that does science for money. I'm a scientist that helps engineers build things for money. So let's not get into the actual signal characteristics bits. The well within signal analysis is not the name of your podcast.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about starting up a product and how you develop it, or speak specifically about your product. What are the steps that have to be taken to get a product to market like this when you're starting it? Obviously, you're going to be in charge of a lot of the data and research part of it, but just the big major chunk steps that you have to be a part of.
Absolutely. Well, sure. I'm lucky in the sense that a product cycle for something like this, if you've got a general rule that I'd set for that, is you think it will be hard and it's harder than that. It by no means makes it impossible. We have very good people here who are working specifically on making it possible. But for people who aren't familiar with the process, in general, you start out with an idea and then you have something that is a horrible cobbled together mess of circuit boards and measurements. And then you have a demonstration of principle, which is sometimes called a viable product. And then you have something that you can build yourself that is past a prototype into kind of a sort of proto-manufacturable device. And then eventually you have something that can be manufactured. Now, I've come here at the point where we are largely doing QA and bug hunting on something that has spent the last 4 years being developed by the engineering staff that we've had here. And what that means is we're currently at the stage where we're looking at how does it get deployed? How does it get used? And how many different ways can we break it to ensure it will not be broken in future? So it's quite a long ways along. And anyone who has the wild optimism that it's easy to just knock something together in an afternoon, unless you're an absolute genius and you work very hard and you're a full stack engineer, with some things that aren't usually implied by that, like knowing how microcontroller programming works, a good understanding of firmware, and then of course the ability to actually fabricate something yourself. Which is its own skill entirely. Unless you're that person, it's something that needs a team. So I'm just lucky that kind of data scientific measurement element of this is the thing that has come along right now once the device is reasonably mature. I mean, if you wanted to buy one, we would sell you one, but we would sell you one that we made here in-house. And we're just in the process now of that being able to change, which is extremely exciting for everyone because it makes it more broadly available. But obviously, we want people to buy it because we think it's useful. We think it solves a variety of problems. But right now, we're at the stage where they have to be fabricated. And that is production engineering and R&D engineering are very much not the same thing. So, you know what they say, a startup is like flying a plane while you're building it. When you add hardware somewhere, it's like flying a plane while you're building it. And also unaccountably, your shoes are on fire. So you can't stand in the same place for too long. It's extremely challenging. It's a good thing we like that because I mean, otherwise no one would do it.
Definitely know there's a lot of wearables out there. I'm sure people listening to this podcast have seen a lot. And I think the initial thing that jumps out is that it doesn't extend from the skin. Like you're saying, it maintains in the sleeve. But what are some other key characteristics of the sleeves that make it different than other wearables that are currently in the market, would you say?
Oh, that's a very good question. Okay, there's nothing that's quite like this. I mean, there's two other ways of looking at this. I mean, we're tracking motion, we're tracking biometrics, right? So the differentiation parts is how you do that, both of those tasks, with something else. Now, computer vision's come a very long way. So being able to track something that you see using a camera from either a standalone or a phone or a webcam or anything else, being able to track motion and turn that into the kind of information that we collect is actually a pretty good idea. The only problem for us is that, I mean, there's inherent problems with that. Like if you turn around, you kill the motion on that you are entirely dependent on the quality of the algorithm. It's very hard to change postures sometimes while you're using a computer vision-based approach. So they're very cool, and I like them, and I read about them all the time. But the nice thing about an on-body device, apart from the accuracy, is it also allows you to get the biometrics at the same time. So the competing biometric space is obviously way bigger than the competing motion space because it starts off with, at one end, Holter monitors, and other forms of heart rate tracking over time for on-body devices. And there are some consumer devices that do that now. The Apple Watch, obviously. Various versions of the Garmin, Suunto, Polar, other smaller companies I won't get into. There's research devices, consumer devices, medical devices that all do biometric tracking. Now, those are cool as well. I've used them to do research. I've worked with data that came off them. What we really need is the combination of both in the same garment. Now, like anywhere, anyone who tells you that a wearable device is perfect and every piece of data that they get from it will be amazing. Okay, I don't mean to burst your bubble, but you have to understand, if someone goes to a cardiologist's office and they get a brand new Holter monitor out of a packet and they use great big sticky electrodes to put 5 or 7 individual electrodes on the thorax to track the heart rate over time, and then they put a big thing that looks like a Walkman from the 80s on your belt to be able to save that data, which is extremely inconvenient a lot of the time. And some of the old ones weighed so much that old people didn't like using them. If you do that, you will still get errors. And that is the most short-term, inconvenient possible wearable that you can imagine. They're also wildly expensive because they are a legitimate medical device. And those still have data problems. Maybe not a lot, but if you run that the whole way down to things that are mounted in watches or things that are mounted in a patch on the chest, or variations on a theme of those, clips that are attached to the ear, etc., all of these will return imperfect data. In a laboratory, I used to collect perfect data because a scientific observation is controllable. If we get a bad observation in a condition, a lot of the time we simply say, can you do that again, please? If you give someone a drug and you're trying to capture a 90-minute response and you miss a minute, then you manually take that minute out, use rather sophisticated methods to fit the little curve over the top so it makes perfect sense, and then go about your day. Absolutely none of that care and attention can be paid to anything like this. It's all about trying to find the right level of accuracy where the inference that comes from it is capable of solving a problem. So I suppose what I'm working my way around to very slowly is the idea that with motion past a certain level, and our motion is now out of we like this and starting to become more sort of beautiful, it's probably better than a physical goniometer if you attach the device, right? It's certainly not better than anatomical studies because it's very difficult to be, but it's in the right realm. And the biometrics are starting to become pretty good. If they're deployed at the same time, considering our environment for limited accuracy, what can we solve with it? So I don't think there's anyone else in that space in the way that we've imagined it. Because the whole point of that, obviously, is to be able to track important parameters around human movement while you're not in the room. And there are other approaches for pieces of it, but summing it all together is largely an us job. And if you think it's a really good idea, go and read our patent portfolio and find out how much of it we've had to protect. And lawyers are expensive. So here we are. I'm sorry, JD, I'm rambling. It's early in the morning. I'm highly caffeinated, and you're a very friendly man. So it's bringing out the voluble sense of this. Let's have another question so I don't make this worse.
You make some great points there about not being in the same room. A lot of the other wearables and devices in that realm require cameras and things like that. Talk a little bit about, I don't know if excitement is the right word or opportunity, but without the therapist having to be on site, how does it change with the new advancements to telehealth and patients not coming into the office because of the current pandemic and some of the shift? How is that going to affect y'all rolling out this product in the environment?
It's already affected us very much. Like I said, this is a general use device. There's lots of things that it can do. We've had plenty of contact with a variety of athletic training people in a personal and an extremely professional capacity. Like, I mean, I probably shouldn't name drop. I don't think I have the authority to do that. But imagine the highest level of international professional sports. We've had several conversations with people who are interested in motion tracking in that sense. Insurance companies, individual and network physical therapists, people who are in the kind of the quantified self community, the people who are have a sort of personal curiosity, which is a lot of people whose company I enjoy very much. I've used to go to QS conferences and talk to people who did their own kind of homebrew version of all this, and I always found it much more stimulating in the kind of ideas sense than academic conferences. Because I know I come across like a very stuffy kind of academic sort of chap. I mean, yeah, very much. Though the patches on my elbows and the rest of it. Lots of people in individual athletic context, so trainers and people who take things very seriously, some college sports teams, long laundry list of people who are interested in biometrics and motion at the same time. So the focus on physical, I mean, anyone who's built a device wants it to help as many people as possible and to be as useful as possible. So when all of this silliness started to begin in February, we had eventually imagined that this is a place that we'd get to rather than this is something we want to go full tilt at right now. Because there are a lot of, discounting manual therapy, which is obviously a lot of PT, you can't replace the idea that something needs to be manipulated, but you can do an awful lot of analog exercises. And a lot of PTs have been quite clever about figuring out ways to administer care remotely. And in that context, we've probably had the most interest of people who want to talk to us and say, so you put this on someone and I'm not there. After presumably we've had an initial face-to-face consultation or even maybe not. And I can actually watch over the internet where their joints are and how much effort they're making while I am streaming both the video of the person and the measurements which are saved of the person themselves. So, I mean, it's very easy to understand the context of how that would be useful because, I mean, the physical, I feel incredibly bad every day for what's happened to the industry here. When you have something which is physical therapy from a sort of a civic and insurance perspective, it's an incredibly good use of money. It prevents a lot of chronic illnesses. It's an amazing kind of value proposition for everyone, including the people who don't have to get chronic illnesses. And PTs, in my experience, work very hard and are occasionally not particularly well compensated for their very hard work. And in this particular environment, we immediately have contact with a respiratory disease that means it's very hard to make direct contact with people. And by definition, you must be close to them, especially to do manual therapy and manipulations. I mean, what are the odds of the circumstances? So I was very happy with the renewed focus on this kind of bodywork, physiotherapy, manual therapy, physical therapy space. Simply because it was the best opportunity to do something particularly useful. I hope I answered the question in there somewhere.
I think that's excellent. I think you bring up some good points of what we've experienced. Definitely you can't do the manual therapy from a distant location, but some of the challenges that we do face is getting objective measurements and checking compliance of home exercise programs while you're distant. So speak a little bit about using it as
a compliance. You raise a very good point. I've got to get that before you ask another one. Compliance.
Yeah, talk about compliance a little bit.
It's almost impossible to put a sleeve on and do exercise and do anything else except the actual exercise. The data is time-stamped. The data is immediately uploaded through the DM. You put it on, it starts sending numbers, full stop, end of story. And if it's on, it's on. The reason that it has a temperature change is not because inside a block of silicon, the temperature is very interesting. It's not a good measure of either your body temperature or the ambient temperature because it's a temperature sensor completely encased in a big block of rubber well, a thin but wide block of rubber. What will that tell you, though? It will tell you when it's on, because the skin is, unless you live somewhere really warm and you're outside, the skin is a lot warmer than the ambient environment. So it will tell you when it's on. Likewise, the heart rate and oxygen saturation will tell you if it's being worn. Likewise, the stretch sensor will tell you if it's being worn. And then, of course, you have to make movement within regular human parameters. So if it works, the compliance of this is, it's not just even like seeing a video of it. It's having it measured from the inside out. The sleeve knows when it's on. The sleeve knows when it's being used. And with provider access to the database, you know what's happening as well. Things to sort out that are in those features, but that is actually one of the things that people have mentioned. I never thought it would be, we were thinking originally, this is a measurement device. This is for doing measurement. And then a lot of people that we've talked to have immediately said what you just said. Is this something that I can use to make sure that the people that I am being paid to treat, who are having the cost of their treatment supported by another party, be it an insurance company or their rich uncle or the government or whoever, can I ensure that they are compliant with the program that we're paying for that we know is the best possible option for them?
Definitely some availability in that space, both from remote monitoring and compliance. So I appreciate you taking some time and sharing some information with that. Talk a little bit about what you think is the hardest part. I know you've been in this realm for a few months now, but what's the hardest part about launching a new product? Is it the research? Is it going through the data and trying to see what's reasonable? Is it marketing? What would you say is the most difficult part about getting this out to the public?
The certainty that it has the right level of durable robustness. The manifest ways where you think that something is, the fact that you have to make, no device is perfect. No piece of software is perfect. No piece of hardware is perfect. Unless it's a rock. And even that you can crack if you throw it hard enough. Everything has a kind of trajectory of function. And the hardest part is trying to find all of the pieces where that might go wrong, all the codependencies that might be that something would make a problem for other people, and trying to presuppose and pretest every single possible thing that could get in someone's way. We have no intention of making something that's partially functional or annoying, and every intention of making something where you don't have to think about using it. But the amount of back-end checking and quality assurance and bug hunting and testing and general poking and prodding that goes into that is very substantial. The difference between we've made one and it works and it makes a cool demonstration and this can be manufactured and sold at scale to people who will like it is much, much bigger than the difference between I have a good idea and I have something that might work and here's a cool demonstration. At least that would be my answer. Other people with other portfolios here may have different answers. But because it's an endless well, you can think and check yourself completely to death with trying to make predictions and take measurements about function.
Definitely excellent points there about Cypher Skin and some of the products you have, but I'm excited to talk to a little bit about your personal background as well. I was able to listen to some of your podcast episodes on Everything Hurts. Some definitely great episodes there, but yeah. Speak a little bit.
We have PT listeners as well. That happened a couple of years ago. Once the Stork guys started becoming a little bit more popular. I don't know if you're familiar with Stork.
I'm not.
Does that ring a bell?
I'm not. No, I'm not.
Society for Openness, Transparency, and Replication in Kinesiology.
Okay.
So we have a very open science-y kind of podcast, and that is a kinesiologist, physical therapist kind of space world, and they have very similar scientific concerns to us. And when that was founded, we've had a few movement-y, exercise-y episodes, and they did very well. And you know, at that point in time, they started to fold into our kind of listenership, which was excellent. Okay. I really like talking to PTs. In general, if you're listening to this, you could email me. If you're a PT listening to this, I'm very happy to talk to you. It's this it's a funny kind of job where you're in biomedicine, but at the same time, you're actually physically working on something. In my experience, they tend to be good people. Or maybe it's just because the really friendly ones are the only ones who write to you. I have no idea. If you're an unfriendly physical therapist, you can write to me too.
There you go. Definitely. Talk a little bit about, from your personal and professional growth, who has had the biggest influence and impact on your personal and professional growth as a mentor?
As a mentor, I made it a rule years ago not to have specific mentors. It was like, he's one person. Here's my Professor McGonagall. I never wanted that. I have a sort of an influential network of 30, influential on me, not necessarily in general. I'm not talking about the rather unpleasant idea of modern influencers, but people who very genuinely understand aspects of human nature, human behavior, business science, etc. I have a network of people that I draw on when it comes to that. I think the idea of having a North Star as a particular human being is reasonably unhealthy. Also, not entirely divorced from the fact that a lot of the people that are chosen to be that are generally people who have extremities in their personality that make things very challenging for others. So there's a lot of people out there who, it's like, let's put Jack Welch on a pedestal. Now, I don't think that will work if you're the regional HR management of a paper company. I think you will hector alienate and annoy the people around you. So, I mean, I know that's a kind of an unsatisfying answer, but there's very, very definitely, you know, no stars and no masters tattooed across my heart. I will make my own decisions when it comes to how we do that. But there's also, look, there's a lot of people whose advice that I cling to within certain domains. Beyond that, it's quite hard to put someone on a pedestal. And I never wanted to be on one myself. So I guess it's congruent.
Excellent points there. And I definitely appreciate that feedback from you. And how you view
continue to ask future guests. I mean, look, I'm perfectly well aware that other people don't think like that. It's just all I can bring to that particular table.
What about some things that excite you from a personal, professional level? How do you refuel? I'm sure you, as part of a startup and in the scientific realm, you spend a lot of time at work, but how do you refuel on a personal and professional level?
I have a bit of a personal problem with work. There are times when we'll be here for 10, sometimes up to 12, hopefully not more than 12, because 12 is 7 to 7, and that's a day. But I still write. I've been writing for years and thinking about something that's completely different. I know that's not time off, writing a complicated document. It's just so second nature at this point in time. There's so many things I'm compelled to do that a lot of the time when I've got time off, I start working on something that I'm writing. This is I find it hard sometimes to fully disengage with everything that's happening, and there's a lot of stuff I want to do, so I'm simply compelled to do something else that is probably challenging immediately after that, and you know there's a lot of I know meditation is very popular and it has been for years. Likewise, all the different variations of it. But there's a lot to be said for sitting still in the complete absence of medication. I don't know if you can list that as like doing absolutely nothing as a hobby. It sounds like a perfectly balmy thing to list as an actual hobby. But I do a great deal of absolutely nothing sometimes. And I know people are going, that's the worst answer I've ever heard. Try it.
See, I would say in our busy society and busy world.
You absolutely put aside 10, 15 minutes, like not sort of like, oh, I took a 2-minute meditation break. No, you didn't. Be honest with yourself. Try doing nothing for 15 minutes.
I would definitely consider that a hobby in our society. Sometimes doing nothing is good.
Some guys continued to do nothing from then until now. So, some people, it can be a profession.
Yes, sir. Awesome. We talked a little bit about Cypher, talked about what you're doing currently. Let's talk about the future and what you're excited about moving forward. specifically with this product, of how you feel like it can revolutionize some of the health and fitness world?
Oh, so much. Look, the immediate steps are getting a platform that everyone who can use it is happy with. Because it's one of those, obviously we've engineered it like this. It's one of these situations where everyone gets help and everyone makes money. I mean, that's the North Star of a kind of business goal. Like everyone that's in the chain that is, you are either serving as your customer or the customers of those people who are themselves being served. The whole point is to get all of the components to this together, where insurance companies are making money because they're preventing chronic illness, where people are not having to suffer through things that might be ameliorated through physical intervention, which is a constellation of different things, where governments have less of a burden of disease, where the military has less musculoskeletal injuries. The list goes on, and there's so many pieces to getting that actually robust that it's in itself, as much as that sounds like, well, that sounds like the continuation of your business model, James. It is, but it's a very, very big thing to be able to want to do. And what I'd really, I would love it to be the case where we have a database, and the database can help us answer the questions of the people who are going into it in the first place. That is, I mean, at that point, you actually have insight for the people who want the device in the first place. I want to solve a problem, but will we actually have insight into how you would use this product to do that? So that we will come to a point fairly soon where we have to switch from the development of the thing that is just about built at this point, and through the variations of it, into what can we do with it. And it's so wide open, sometimes I hesitate to speculate about the future. You know, at a startup, a lot of the time, it becomes a matter of living through the present.
So, man, some definitely exciting parts. And one question that we like to ask a lot of our guests on here, and I'm very excited for your answer because you're such a friendly guy, but we like to ask a legacy question about what people want to be remembered for. And the question is, when all is said and done, what do you want to be remembered for?
The fact that I built stuff that worked. The fact that there's a long history within science and a long history within building hardware to do measurement, of building something that sort of never quite made it. And not necessarily he made a difference, but when he was finished, it did what he said it would.
Excellent.
I guess... maybe that would, I'd like a tombstone like that. Honestly, here lies James Heathers, hit by a bus at the age of 97. Usually he wasn't a hypocrite.
Excellent. Definitely think that's a great legacy, and I appreciate you sharing that with me.
Well, the context you say to go into that, but the maintenance of the principle is important to me.
And then as we wrap up and bring this episode to a close, just want you to summarize anything that we've covered or hit on anything that we've missed. But I also want you to be able to leave a calling card or some contact information where people can reach out to you if they're interested in getting in contact with you or discussing anything more that you've covered on our podcast.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of stuff that could fit into that box. I'm the most easily Googleable person in the world because my name is on every scientific paper I ever wrote. I have my own website, which is jamesheathers.com. Also, cypherskin.com will come up. If you have friends that are, if anyone wants a job as a VP of partnership or you know any particularly good back-end engineers, very happy to have them. Yeah, send it to your engineering friends. What else? If you're not incredibly bored of me yet, you can find my podcast, which is everythinghurts.com, which has been going for 3 years now. I'm not even sure. We're on about episode 120, which is a very good time and significantly less focused and more unpleasant than this excellent, well-managed podcast, which hopefully is part of the appeal, he said, crossing his fingers. Twitter, I have. There's other pages as well. It's very easy to get in contact with people through Twitter. You can just open it and send me a message. My email is trivial to find on my website. If you are DPT or a PT in the most general sense, and you want to talk about how this works, you know where to find me. Like I said, I'm the most findable guy you can imagine. Find me and let's talk.
Well, James, I appreciate it, man. It's a very interesting podcast. We learned a lot about the devices that y'all have in the making, and I'm very excited for what it's going to bring to our physical therapy field and our patients in the near future.
Me too, man. Me too. It's going to be a wild ride, but hopefully we do something that helps people.
Well, thanks again for joining us. I appreciate you coming on today.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks again for joining us for this episode of Well Within Reach. We believe in the power of physical movement along with emotional and spiritual connection. As a team, we hope that you find what we share here helpful on your journey. Whether you are battling physical issues or looking for kindred folks, we are honored to have the opportunity to connect with you. As a rapidly growing company, we are always looking to expand our footprint and our tribe. If you are looking for more information about our company or how to join our team, please visit mtspts.com. If you have content ideas for our podcast or feedback of any kind, you can reach us at podcast@mtspts.com. If you found value from it, please share it with a friend. Make sure you also subscribe so you get notified each week as a new episode releases. You can subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you listen. We would be extremely grateful for that, as your reviews help encourage others to listen in. Remember, your best self is well within reach, and so is our next episode. We hope you join us then.